Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
So welcome to a Starship Sova, a special. This is the Captain's Logs. This is hopefully to entice you to buy this current book of Starship Sovas. I am Tony C. Smith.
And I am Kieran O'Carroll.
Kieran, look when you said that, honestly, I got the hairs on the back of my neck stood up there. How are you doing?
Very well, Tony, sir. Very well indeed. How's things with your good self?
Hey, going great guns.
You must be very excited, sir. Your captain's logs have just come out there. There's another titter in the background there as you just reach for your loo roll.
It's just squeezed out this week. Kieran, do you know what I mean? I've got it in my hand here, and I'm going to send you a copy. You know, no expense spared. And I'll get you to sign one as well, and we'll try and auction it off. But honestly, Kieran, when you see it, you'll be rather impressed.
It looks good on the website. It looks like a nice glossy cover. Mm-hmm. Big rocket ship on there, not entirely unphallic. And edited by Tony C. Smith. Tony, come on, how many years? It's been 2 years since I moved down to London. And in those 2 years, what has Starship Sofa become?
You know, hey, but it's where did it start, Kieran? That's the most important bit. That's what I've got you on for. Where did it start?
Mostly late at night or early in the morning. That's where it started, I think.
Do you know, and I think I might have mentioned this when I phoned you up a couple of days ago, just to kind of arrange talking about this. When you do look through this book, there is, you know, because we've got, the idea was, you know, got loads of a few transcribers to transcribe a few of the shows, and honestly, Kieran, throughout the place there is just like laughing, you know, that was saying like laughing brackets, and it's amazing how much, you know, there was of that.
I think what surprised me most is that you told me I'm pretty hard to understand. I can't believe that. Surely not.
When did I say that to you? When we used to do the shows, or was this in reference to? I remember
in reference to transcribing it. The poor buggers that you set off there for the thankless task, having so much difficulty understanding the words that I was saying.
Well, honestly, when you read it, Kieran, you know, when you read it back, you sometimes wonder, why do we talk like that? Do you know what I mean? We kind of get a sentence out without going back and saying the first part of the sentence first, and then jump into something completely different. You know, when it's all written in words, and then the other person's picking up exactly what's said, and then you jump back to the first. You know, it's like that throughout, and you're thinking, like you say, for the transcribers, how on earth they got through that?
Well, if I remember correctly, I had a conversation with you one day. I was either going into town for drinks, or I was, it would be on the way to work in the morning. And you said, Kieran, I've got this great idea, and I don't know if you're into it or not, but how do you feel about doing a podcast? And I said, what's a podcast? And he said, it's this brand new thing. It's just come out, and it will be one of the first ones doing it. And it's basically like an online radio show. And we talked for the duration. Well, it takes about 45 minutes for me to walk from my old house in Newcastle all the way through to town. During that 45-minute conversation, the structure of what was and was for 2 years, Starship Sofa, evolved. I mean, we got the title in one conversation, which was a random jump around of various possibilities that you kind of vetoed or eyed or nayed, and we settled on Starship Sofa.
Actually, Starship Sofa was your baby name when you think about it.
Yeah, but it was, I just shot ideas at you.
I can't remember.
That sounds all right.
I can't remember any other names. Oh, there was Corbett's Chair we had floating around.
Yeah, that's right, that's right. Because the idea, of course, was that it would be, the best way of running it would be, we would do it just like Ronnie Corbett used to do his jokes, where he'd sit in the big chair, little bloke, big chair, and he would go round the houses to tell one simple joke. And he'd jump backwards and forwards, and I thought that was a good concept, because I couldn't really see any of us, either one of us, being able to approach it in a linear fashion, because what we knew about the subject, and it was your idea to run with sci-fi, what we knew about the subject was quite different. So what we did know about would always have to be peppered in with what we knew a damn sight more about, which was bollocks, if you know what I mean.
You know, see, my memory, this is why I'm glad I'm speaking, you know, because it's bringing loads of memories back for me. Did we, you know, when we chose to do, or when I phoned you up to do the podcast, was my initial thoughts to just to do a podcast? We didn't know the actual topic, or did we?
No. It was definitely science fiction.
Right. It wasn't going to be on something else that we were kind
cookery.
Of...
Cookery. It wasn't going to be on cookery, or dog grooming.
Women's lingerie.
Or how to get the most out of your job through effective time management.
I can remember the phone call, you know, because it was a nice, lovely day, and I was at work, and like I say, it was just, we went on for ages, and I've even actually wrote that in the foreword, you know, me saying, do you want to do a podcast? You saying yes, then saying, what's a podcast?
Yeah, I had no idea. I genuinely had absolutely no idea. In fact, I think after the conversation, I looked it up on the internet, and it was turned out to be coined by some Dutch MTV presenter.
Well, even when, and as well, this is when we first started it, did we have a clue? Because I hadn't a clue, do you know what I mean? I kind of know now a little bit more about the kind of technology side of it, but we were so book bare naked, do you know what I mean? And you remember, because one of the shows that are in there, I had to put number one in, was the Alfred Bester one, and we didn't understand, or I didn't understand, editing. Do you know what I mean? We recorded it. Was it three times? Because the first time we made like a mistake, one mistake. Not now. We'll just edit it out. Do you know what I mean? But I think we made like a mistake halfway through, and bollock! We'll have to start that again. So
I think you hadn't got it on record the first time round.
Was it?
Oh yeah, and then the second time we did do it three times. I remember that there. But still, it's worth pointing out that, for me, if there's an episode that I've listened to more than once, it's the Bester one. And I think it was just the sheer marvel of hearing something that I thought sounded so complete in its own particular kind of way. I haven't listened to it for ages, but what stuck with me about the Bester one was, one, that your editing was quite tight. And although the sound quality did get knocked, I think, at the time there, we didn't know any better. It's like my father, I remember my father, his very first video recorder. We had ourselves a VHS one, and he recorded an episode of Dallas on it. which was very popular at the time there, and he played it back, and it was awful. I mean, you could barely make out what was going on. But because it was his very first video recording and his very first video recorder, he turned to us and said, "That's quite good, isn't it?"
It's surprising, you know, when... Remember when we used to, like... And we mentioned this on the shows a few times, you know, all the kind of Deep Space Nine, the DVDs and the Red Dwarf DVDs we used to watch, and the Star Trek ones. You put them on, like, a video, you know, and you watch them now. No, not that we've got one now, but the quality, you know, it's just so bad and fuzzy. And these were, like, ones you were buying. Now, I don't know if they kind of deteriorate that much in a short time, you know, but, like, a VHS video... It's just, the whole picture seems, like, blurred.
I've all those Deep Space Nines I think I've got now. Because it all started off as a collection that Bob, yourself, and myself all contributed to. You said, "I've had a really good idea, fellas. How's about this? We all buy DVDs, all start by Star Trek DVDs, and we'll all keep them together. And we'll all be able to watch them together. But I tell you what would be the smartest idea is that I keep them in my house." And it's a really good idea, fellas. What do you think?
Yes, now you know why. But I'm jumping on my defence here. Because our house was home for everyone. Do you know what I mean? So they were, that was like the central location. So, and actually, I think Bob lived there. So
Yeah, that's right. And Bob told me that you're about to give it all away to a jumble sale, he said, you should jump in and get it. Don't let him do it. And I did, and it's dutifully locked away in my garage in Newcastle where I keep all my stuff stored.
So are you, I was going to ask you that then, are you still down London, or?
Still working in London.
Shandy drinking Southerner.
Yeah, I've been down here for 2 years now, and I live in Camberwell, a marvellous spot. And I took a job as a catering manager in what effectively is a great big bloody office, which is, it's good.
What's,
it's a good place to be, very positive.
I was going to say, because I remember, you know, this is how we kind of, the uniqueness of the shows as well. Your job was so ridiculously long hours up in the Northeast. You would come over to mine on like the last metro or something, and sometimes I would be picking you up about 11:30 at night.
If I was lucky, sometimes I'd be walking all the way over from the metro station. You know, walk for an hour and a half, and then wake you up, and then go and lie on your sofa.
And there was like loads.
I'd be lucky if I got a lift from the station.
There was like loads of little. Oh, the next day you'd check, there'd be loads of little text messages. I'm here. I'm walking. The next one.
A little bit closer.
Yes.
Whitburn is not known for much in the way of anything on a night time. It wasn't as if I could stop off at a pub because they're all shut. There'd be no late night nothings, no late night bus services. Just not even people walking their dog, Tony.
Kieran, what's your memories of the actual shows, you know, we sat down and did them? Because I sometimes think about this, you know, it's a weird thing when people listen to the show from what we do when we record it. You know what I mean? It doesn't feel like we're putting a show together when we're talking, when we're like, cracking on. It just feels like we're talking, and yet, you know, people listen to it. Have you got any thoughts on that?
Well, I think about 8 hours research on each bloody show was part and parcel of it for me. That just took I'd reach a point, it was like cramming for an exam, and I'd reach a point there where I'd started off knowing virtually nothing, and at the end of it I knew even less. And then it would all these written notes where I'd be using and stuff, and in the original early shows my source material wasn't the internet, it was reference books. I had about 4 or 5 science fiction encyclopedias that I picked up over the years.
And they were out of date as well.
Oh, God, they were well past the sell-by date. I mean, most of them were from when I was a kid, so they were from the early 80s.
They would stop at the 80s.
So it kind of covered the period that I was most interested in, which was obviously the New Wave, the American New Wave, and of course they touched upon some of the writers, you know, that were part of the New Worlds type kind of British New Wave, which, you know, as you know, is a different thing altogether. But yeah, when I got my computer, when I got my famous G3, then the world was my oyster. Text recognition software to start with, so I could scan stuff in and play with it. And then after that, on the internet to find out that there was a whole wealth of information that I could steal from other people's research. Marvellous.
It honestly is, Kieran. It's like hand on heart. Yeah, like the amount of stuff we covered was unreal when you think about it now. Because odd times, you know, there's been certain writers that I thought, you know, it would be nice to do maybe a special on them, you know, like a 3-week special. And I've printed it all off at work, you know what I mean? And say one of the big ones, like Asimov or something like that. And then I've looked at it and I'm thinking, I honestly couldn't do it, you know what I mean? I certainly couldn't do it by myself. And you just think, wow, you know, that, because it was, I think we did 67 shows of like authors. We might have done the odd one, you know, there was the last two, and I'm trying to look in me kind of files at the actual shows, were like two Christmas chats, like part one, part two. But the actual last, very last one, which I'm going to play on this show at the end of us talking here now, was that show 69, and you know what show 69 was, don't you?
Let me just take a wild guess there. I think that one there, I don't remember too much about that one, sex and sci-fi. Religion and sci-fi, I seem to remember being a particularly tough one, because in the aftermath of doing that, I realized I'd missed out huge tranches of stuff that I should have mentioned in there.
Well, I think, you know, when you're looking back at the religion one, because that's in this book there.
I'm surprised, actually, because I don't remember that being a particularly good show.
No, I didn't. I wanted to go for one, just like a broad spectrum, because I could have started off, you know, just choosing 1 to 10. Do you know what I mean? And I thought, well, then I'm missing other ones. Do you know what I mean? Just like, I wanted to get in. Remember the one where you had gnomes, I think it was the Haldeman show, when we're talking about the Black Panthers in the Lake District and garden gnomes.
Oh, because the previous week, the Black Panther, who was, I think, a notorious rapist, we read up there and couldn't quite understand why the Black Panthers were active in Surrey and what particular kind of push against the race they were working on down there. And then the following week, when I kind of came back and said, just the Black Panther was this notorious rapist and wasn't a Black Panther, per se, then it was just like working out what the Black Panthers would get up to in suburbia. And it would be garden gnomes, and it would be perhaps, I don't know, running across village greens.
Mind, I still think, and actually I didn't put that one in because it was like part one and part two, is when you're talking about Uncle Frank on Red Dwarf. That's just, honestly, it's a defining part in my lifetime, that, when you and I think, and I wasn't listening, I think I was like writing notes, you know, making sure everything was working when we were talking, and then I just listened, caught, you know, you talking about Uncle Frank, and I'm thinking, Uncle Frank is like coming into your mum's bedroom. Yeah, creases me up even now thinking about that.
There was two stories in Red Dwarf, wasn't it? There was the other one, it obviously, which one of the writers did it, I don't know, but the other one's all about the shoes, isn't it?
You go and remind us then, Kieran?
Peterson had, Lister's telling Rimmer that Peterson bought these shoes on Callisto, and the shoes, they were kind of semi-sentient, artificial intelligence shoes, and no matter how pissed you were, they'd take you home. So anyway, the shoes started getting bored with just taking Peterson from the boozer back to his bedroom, and the shoes then started taking him to other places, because the shoes wanted to see more of the world. So Peterson would find himself in Helsinki or Bangkok or something like that. And Peterson started getting a bit disturbed and started trying to get rid of the shoes. And I can't remember how it plays out there, but the shoes kept on coming back. And then eventually the shoes jumped in a car and drove themselves into a canal in Amsterdam, and they died. They died. And Peterson was really upset about this. And Peterson went off to go and see a priest. And the priest said not to worry. And he said it was all fine. And Rimmer turns to Lister and says, "Well, why? Why was it okay?" He said, "It's because," he said, "the priest told him that shoes, it's all right for the shoes because they go on to a better place, because shoes have got soul." Or in fact, two of them. But it was the same kind of story. It was the same kind of style. Obviously, one of them had this particular trick of writing these quite clever, what would effectively would be pub stories, the kind of thing you'd tell a bloke in a pub.
Do you know, I was just, you know, when you said that you were a bit disappointed with the, what was it, the religion one?
Mm-hmm.
I think when we did it, because I remember you being a bit, because you were always more, I don't know what's the best way, more worried or more, you know, it had to be kind of right. You know, I was quite a bit, I think, easygoing with that kind of side. You know, I kind of worried about the editing and the actual sound quality. You wanted the, you know, the kind of the facts. But I always thought
content.
Yes, content. You know, I always thought you were a bit upset with the, what was the one? Banksy, E&M Banks. I always thought you were a bit upset with that one. That wasn't to, like, your kind of the standard.
I can't remember. All I can remember is I got as many points on his whiskey test as he did.
Yes, I remember.
Which is not bad. Not bad going there for a half Irishman going against a Scot.
I tell you what, I did.
Banks has done some big drinking.
I tell you what, I did put in. I put in the one which I thought, because I didn't really know much about this writer. You know, the James Triptree Jr. one. Because I honestly, that was like a lot of these shows for me, mind you, were shows of discovery. Do you know what I mean? Because you know the writer, or you know his name, or you know her name, as if, you know, as we're kind of led to believe or found out. And especially with Triptree Jr., you know, what happened at the end, you know, I just thought that was like a stunning show. And that was a big one. And then I picked in Samuel Delaney because I know he was, you know, this was, is he, and am I still right in thinking he's probably one of your favourite writers?
He still is. Yes, that was a big upset for me when Michael Moorcock dissed him, and when we went out to go and see him, because Samuel Delaney, he did Time Told as a Helix of Semi-Precious Stones, even I can't remember the title, which was one of the New Worlds stories that they bought, one of Samuel Delaney's shorts, and ran it. And Mike Moorcock described it as something pretentious.
Did he?
Yeah, he did. And then I think he must have had an attack of guilt, because I saw on one of his, on Moorcock's Miscellanea, him talking about how he quite likes Chip Delaney and just don't know why he said that and all that kind of stuff.
It's funny, you know, because I've been doing these interviews with, like, writers where I've got 15 questions. You know, the questions always stay the same. It's only the writers that change. And I've been doing some really big ones, you know, Kieran. And I'm trying to get this Chip Delaney, because he's on Facebook, you know, and I don't know if he's kind of settled. He's a lecturer or a teacher over there in America. And actually, I've never gotten back to him. He said, give us a couple of weeks till lecturing quietens down, and I still haven't gotten back to him. But
yeah, he's very much, I think, after having looked at it from other angles, he's part of what they call the Harlem Renaissance.
Right.
It was the kind of, from, I guess, the 20s onwards, Harlem in New York, obviously, became a hotbed of a black intelligentsia. And Chip Delaney, although I never really thought of him in that particular way, I just thought of him as a sci-fi writer who, funnily enough, without even knowing anything about his race, just the way he wrote reminded me of Iceberg Slim, and I was absolutely certain that he was a black gentleman, and he was. But he comes from that kind of background. There was an awful lot going on in America.
And I sold your Iceberg Slim book, didn't I, as well, on eBay?
Yeah, you did. You were very good that way, Tony. Definitely not leaving a thing around your house. You interviewed Tiger Melville just recently. What was that all about?
Tiger, China.
Tiger Melville, Tony. Tiger. Was he like a tiger?
He's actually a really nice guy, do you know what I mean? I did it for the what, CIFLA, you know, the Science Fiction Writers of America. I interviewed him for that, because I can't actually, you know, type an interview, you know, and send some questions over and type, oh. So I just kind of arranged with him and phoned him up, and I got someone to transcribe it. It's actually one of the transcribers in this book who's done this. Gilderan transcribed it all. And, you know, he was lovely, to be quite honest, Kieran. And what's nice is when you get them sometimes off topic and, you know, you just find out other things about them. You know, he wrote this last book, you know, City in the City. I don't know if you've read it or not, but his mum was like a big kind of crime detective-y noir reader. And mm-hmm. he was writing this book for her, and she died of cancer. Do you know what I mean? And he went into all that. And that was, you know, it's nice when that happens. No, I'm not saying it's nice when that happens, but, you know, when they go off topic and they reveal something else.
Yeah, the motivation behind it all. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I've read a couple of his books recently. Well, it was on recommendation, because if you remember correctly, again, Michael Moorcock recommended him, of all the guys who are writing at the moment, the one that he really thought was doing something worthwhile.
Are you happy? Are you happy with his work, or do you not like him? Or
well, I made a bit of a mistake. I went in blind and picked up a book by himself, and it turned out to be his first children's book. So it was a bit kind of sketchy and kid-like, and I thought, oh Christ!
No, I read that, mind you, in London. Is that the one?
Yeah, that's the one.
Yes, I read that Italy last year. I went on holiday, and I really enjoyed it. You know, I thought it was some great. I don't know where you're getting to. I might spoil it for you now, but you know where there's the window panes are like spiders. Have you gotten to that part?
No, I'm just pretty much at the bit where they end up on the bridge and the bridge is being stormed by the smog, and that's as far as I've got.
Right. Well, I loved it. I think it may be because, like you say, it was like a kind of children's young adults things. You know, and I whizzed through it. It was like great holiday reading. But he's had out just lately that City in the City, and then he's got this at the minute. It's just come out, The Kraken, which everyone's ranting and raving about. Mm.
No, I've only read, is it Perdue Station?
Yes.
I've read Perdue Station, and I think I've got on my bookshelf to read The Iron Council. But Perdue Station, I really, really enjoyed. I really did enjoy. Well, the weird thing about him, I don't know where, but I was sure I'd seen a picture of China Melville at an earlier stage in the game. And he was
a hippie.
Weirdy.
A what?
He was a beardy whippy. He was a beardy weirdy. He was like, it was all hair, stuff like that, long coat. You know, the kind of guy who'd be hanging around wearing the same clothes from some time in the 70s all the way through till now. And hasn't changed, you know, with like rose-tinted glasses, perhaps, and kind of a long coat, long bushy hair. I don't know. Quite like listening to The Damned or would be a good idea. Jesus and Mary Chain and Echo and the Bunnymen. And then I saw a picture of him just the other week, and he doesn't look anything like it. He's some handsome devil with loads of piercings.
Yes, he is. Nice guy, mind you. Out of them, because I might actually, because when we ended, I think I carried on for probably another, I don't know, say 20, 30 shows. I think it probably went up to actually show maybe 99 or 100. I don't know. Was there anyone you wanted to get done and we didn't get to? You know, I know there was the big ones, like we didn't do Asimov and we didn't do Clark, but was there anybody?
I wasn't interested in doing the big lads, because there was no. I mean, did we do Heinlein? We must have done Heinlein.
Did we do Heinlein? Because
it was Heinlein or Henlein. I could never really make up my mind.
Did we bow to pressure on that one?
I don't know. It was
a three-parter. There you go as well, mind you. We've covered three parts of them.
Yeah.
And you padded out the shores.
Yeah, I was glad we did Philip K. Dick, because that one there, in part of my reading history there, I remember reading and finding this decline in his work and this kind of, it's like a stuck record just going over the same themes over and over again in Valis and all those other ones that came at the end. Who did I not do that I would have liked to have done? Well, we did all the one. We did Sheckley, didn't we?
Yes, we did.
We did Sheckley. Did we do Silverberg?
Mm-hmm. Did we?
Silverberg?
Yes. I spoke to him, you know. I've interviewed him. He was lovely.
He's a big hitter. I'm slightly envious about that. What did old Silverberg have to say for himself?
Well, he's, you know, because like I say, he's 15. He was very, you know, you kind of see the pictures in his younger days, you know, and he looked like a kind of cool, radical guy, you know what I mean? He's kind of goaty and all that. But now he's like an elder statesman. And he came over as, you know, this like a very calm elder statesman, do you know what I mean? And he was a bit, you know, I don't know, you didn't mess with him, just, you know, so much respect there for him. But he gave us a number, or he kind of put us in touch with, I did, Jack Vance. Kieran, I spoke to him, and I've just played that on the show. And the guy's 93, he's blind, he lives at home. You know, I kind of went through Silverberg, and then I went through, like, Jack Vance's son, and, yeah, just, in a way, kind of cold, you know. They knew I was phoning. He sat, and I was, because I've actually done Ray Bradbury as well, but I was on the phone for him.
That's one of your big heroes.
Oh, I know. But I was on the phone for him for, say, 2 minutes, and I was expecting Bradbury to, Jack Vance, to be exactly the same. Do you know what I mean? I was thinking, just, you know what I mean? Yes, no, yes, no, and yes. And I must admit, the full like raw version of it was probably about an hour and a half.
Man,
honestly, he invited us over with the family and everything, Kieran. It was honestly like crowning bit of my kind of time Starship Sofa. Do you know what I mean? It was just unreal.
Jack Vance was a funny one for me, because if you read his books from one book to the next, he changed his style so much so that you'd feel like you're reading a different author. And there were rumors going around at the time that Jack Vance was actually a collective of writers. He wasn't just one person.
Right.
Look at Tales of Dying Earth, which, again, he adopted the style of somebody else. You go on to the things like, what was it, the ones with the Pnumen and all that particular lot. I can't remember, but the style of writing changed so much that people in the community believe, and this is about the same time as James Tiptree Jr. was getting hotly tipped as a fantastic young man. They were saying that Jack Vance was, in fact, more than one person. So much so, you know, that his style changed so much so that people couldn't believe that he was just one bloke. I'm quite envious of that. Jack Vance was one of my little favourites.
Well, you know what was weird as well, Kieran? If you listen to the show, do you know what I mean? Is he just distanced himself from science fiction, had no love for it, anything, you know, fantasy or anything like that. He never read anything. He read his own, and he liked his own work, but he liked crime and mystery, and he had honestly no time for science fiction. Didn't really want to talk about science fiction. Do you know? It didn't interest him in the slightest. Which it's just like I say, that's what makes great kind of interviews. You know, when they go off and they talk about. Did you hear Kieran had a call called Harlan Ellison?
Actually, Mike Moorcock was talking about hooking us up with Harlan. Who? Somebody knows somebody outside of it all was
yes.
Hooking us up with Harlan.
What was it? I think he might have ran his blog or something like that. But to do with these kind of 15 questions, I somehow, you know, wangled Harlan Ellison's number. And I thought, fuck it. And honestly, Kieran, I was shite myself. I phoned him up, and it was his secretary, and I was thinking, oh, you know, what's going to happen? You know, and I was like nervous.
We met one of his ex-secretaries, old Linda.
Yes.
Linda Moorcock.
And, you know, she says, can I speak to Mr. Harlan Ellison, please? She says, who's calling? You know, and she says, can you call back in 5 minutes? And I thought, oh, she's doing checks on us, you know what I mean? The guy's going to come over and clout us one. And I phoned him up, and he was lovely. He didn't do the interview, you know, but he did the typical, like, Harlan. Tony says, I've done them so many times. He says, send us your questions, and he says, I'll answer them in my own way. And it was excellent. And he gave us permission. Well, I don't know if it's actually his permission to give, but he kind of said it's okay, because I've got, remember Langdon Jones, friend of Moorcock's?
Langdon Jones
was one of the kind of new wave writers, friend of Moorcock's. He lives down south, and somewhere down south. Well, he had a story picked in for, you know, Dangerous Visions 3, the one that never, never was. Well, I've got that. I got permission of him to get that played, get it narrated, and I've got some artwork for it. And I thought, I'd have to fucking ask Harlan Ellison. Do you know what I mean? I don't want to just put it out. And he said, whoa, I've got copyright on that. But yeah, he said, "Dot." Just play it, you know. And he was, you know what he said, Kieran? He said, make sure that you give, you know, praise and copyright to Langdon Jones. Straight away, he said that. You know what I mean? Thinking about writers' rights.
Well, he was one of the big guys who were fighting when the screenwriters thing kicked off, wasn't he?
Aye. Mm-hmm.
He definitely came down the side of artist and, what is it? Artist's integrity. What's the actual term, Tony?
No idea. I'm actually quite chuffed at you. There wasn't any that you were desperate to kind of cover. Do you know what I mean? Like we seem to.
It doesn't, Tony. It's 2 years ago. I'll be entirely honest with you.
You kind
2 years
of remember.
Ago. I can't remember. Like I said, the for me, Bester was the one I just had to get off my chest to start with.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Which ones are in here? See if this jogs your memory on anything. I've got the best of one in. You know, like I say, there's only, I don't know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. You know, and that takes up to 300.
There's 11 there, but you've got Bob's. You've got Bob's, the Terry Pratchett one.
But I've got that in. I've got that in, Bob's. And I've also got in our Moorcock Gonzo one. You know, and I actually enjoyed that one because it's just like what we're doing now. We just chatted. About, you know, there was no research. It was quite an easy show. We just give our experience of going over and meeting Moorcock. But it's like, just for them few shows, there's 320 pages. Do you know what I mean? We talk some shite sometimes.
There was a lot of verbiage in there, I'd say, almost definitely.
Well, we've got Alfred Bester. I put that in for number one. Joe Haldeman. Then I got in Hall Nelson. Then I stick in Douglas Adams, part one, part two, because that show meant a lot to us, you know what I mean?
Well, that was more yours than it was mine, that one there.
No, it just, I think it's as well with him dying, so, you know what I mean? Just suddenly and so young. Then I've got James Triptree, Samuel Delaney, because I knew that was, I thought actually you liked, or were keen on doing, should I say, the religion and science fiction. Then, and I don't know why I've got it, Charlie Stross. Because
that would have been after my time, I think.
No, we did Charlie Stross. It was show 46.
Show 46.
I think we went to show 16, like you say, 69. But we did Charlie Stross because, now I don't know, because you read Iron Council, you read a few books on his, didn't you?
No, I read a few of his books. There's no two ways about it.
I'm falling out with the guy, to be quite. I'm not really into him.
Well, you struggled to get an interview with him. I remember that. That was still going on.
Even now, let's say, two months ago, I emailed him, you know, and like these 15 questions are just 15 basics, you know, I wanted them to kind of, I asked everyone out there.
It's a bit like Smash Hit Story. Do you ask them what their favourite colour is?
I put like a shout out on the show and on Twitter and everything like that. It's just, and what would you ask? What was your one question you would ask a science fiction writer? And honestly, kid, I got loads of questions back. And I just whittled them all down, the most popular, what everyone was said. Do you know what I mean? Tell us about your childhood, you know, what stuff like that. What's your favourite? I don't know. I can't even remember the questions. Like you say, I've spoken with kind of many writers, and they've been lovely. You know, Pat Carrigan, science fiction writer. She's called Pat Carrigan. She was on the phone an hour. Do you know what I mean? It's loads of writers. I sent a question to kind of Charlie Stross, and you know, there's the questions if you wanted to have a look. And he came back within seconds. You know, like very boring. Oh, he says, I'm going away. I haven't got time for that. And by the way, the very boring questions. And I thought, you missed the point straight away, man. It was like, the whole thing was like, what would you ask once? You know what I mean? I didn't want the complicated questions because I'm asking like different writers every week. And I just thought, oh, you're winding me up.
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
And some of his, I kind of get into some of his work. Do you know what I mean? I kind of read Glass House and that was all right, but I've tried a few of his works recently and I've just actually getting a review copy of his very, very latest one out there. So
maybe you should burn it in effigy. Just put it out in the back garden there, soak it with lighter fluid and set it away.
Yes.
I'll tell you what I've been reading recently of the British space opera variety. Peter F. Hamilton. He's quite good.
Oh, right. Yes, well, I've got a story by him from a collection of short stories called Death Day, and I've never read any of his, you know, his big writing, mind you, know, big books.
I don't know how big his writing is, but his books are definitely big.
He's got big writing.
Big, curly, girly handwriting, yeah? Which once you condense it from an acre of forest comes down to just three thick books a time.
So, what's he writing that you like? I've never read anything.
Peter F. Hamilton, I think all of his stuff seems to be quite good. He's got lots of big ideas. He's clever. He's quite clever. It's funny, actually. I always think about, it's that Peter Watts guy I always think about. Because when we reviewed the Hugo Awards, Peter Watts, he was probably my second favourite.
He was my least. He still pulls us about that, you know, because I've spoken to him a couple of times. Because did I tell you he went to shite a few weeks ago?
The US, you did.
And that's what I like. We'll get this book signed, me and you, and because he's got a story that's up for a Hugo, and they're trying to get him over to Australia. Do you know what I mean? Because he's had to pay all his court fees and everything like that. And he still, when I spoke to him, you know, he's like I say, he's been through hell and back. He still remembers that I didn't like his work.
Well, you see, you did. It was, I thought his depiction of alien life in that particular one there was one of the depictions of alien thought processes that I remember most. Both that, the aliens who saw us as being kind of the equivalent of time-wasting, troublemaking noise, like some kind of bacterium or plague, and the vampires in that particular book, which I thought was cleverly done.
See, I couldn't understand why vampires of all things were, you know, I don't know, because I've tried to work out, you know, it didn't sit well with us. I don't know why, because and the only one that actually did was that, you know, the Alfenheim one, and that was audio, and I'm putting it down to, I liked the audio. You know, that's how I kind of still consume.
Was Alfenheim Peter Watts as well?
No, Alfenheim was Michael F. Flynn. And it, like you say, you picked the flicking winner. I didn't.
Because Werner Vinge had nailed something clever. Peter Watts, his book was good. Alfenheim, I don't think I liked it that much. It reminded me too much of the kind of rubbish that Michael Crichton would palm off left, right, and centre.
Do you think?
Yeah. But with Peter Watts, I think he did a good thing there. So I wish him all the best. I'll do it in big Peter F. Hamilton girly curlicues. I'll make it the biggest signature I can possibly do.
What else have I got? Thank God, I've never fucking. We're up for a Hugo, you know.
Well, I heard you got nominated for a Hugo.
Yes, aye.
First podcast to do that.
Aye. I mean, we
did some pretty damn heavy networking and pressure can you call them the audience of Starship Sofa?
Kieran, if you remember the olden days, though, that was how, you know, you had to kind of network, you had to kind of get things, you know, that was my kind of, at least one little skill I could bring to the kind of show between were. Do you know what I mean? It was being able to do that and just...
But it's bizarre if you think about it. You couldn't even, we couldn't even pull a, was it a Pulsar award or a Pro Solar award or whatever the hell they were. Parsec.
Right.
Couldn't even pull a Parsec. And then all of a sudden, Tony, there you are getting nominated for a Hugo.
Hey, Kieran, if you can, because you've been to Australia, if you can get to Australia, you can pick the thing up if you're ever lucky enough to win it.
So you've been, hold on a second, you've been nominated again for a Hugo.
Sorry, no. We've been nominated for a Hugo,
mm-hmm.
And now the nomination round's finished, so there's five, six in.
I only see it up on your...
Because you'll probably switch your computer on from one month to the next, man. That's,
well, this is only to get the mice out.
So... You've got until I think it's the 31st of July. You know, there's the five or six like nominees there now. You've got until the 31st of July to pick the winner, and then they announce the winner in, I think it's September the 6th or the 4th or the 2nd, somewhere around there at Worldcon in Australia.
Wow.
And even that, Mike, wow. If you look on the front of the cover of the book, this book I'll send you down, it's got Hugo Award nominated podcast. There's a little bit, you know, like how the professionals have it mentioned on their kind of books.
Well, normally they stick the sticker on after, Tony. This is kind of, I've got a copy of the Iron Council with the fact that it's got winner of the Arthur C. Clarke Award stuck there, a nice silver sticker. It's like wine, you know, and you get a really good wine that gets a decanter award. They stick a little kind of gold sticker on it after. Oh, the fact that you've got it embedded firmly on the cover, actually as part of the print there, if you make enough off this one here, God's sake, get Peter Watts over there, get yourself over there as well.
Oh, it's funny, you know, because even now, that's always been one of my kind of downfalls, is like, I wouldn't get up. Do you know what I mean?
Not, but you're so modest? Surely not, Tony.
I'm fine here, but I'm sure we talked about this. If we ever had to go to a convention, you would get up and do all the chatting. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, but that's simply because I'm terrified beforehand there. I get up there and I start thinking of one-liners and cyclical jokes that I can tie to the one-liners and get myself on and off as quickly as possible with as many laughs as possible.
Do you still, Kieran, here's another thing I've been meaning to ask you for a while as well. Do you still reread the old books? Because I cannot do that. I've never done it. I don't think I've done it once. Do you still go back?
I bought a copy of The Stars, My Destination for a lady at work who
is looking nice
talking about science fiction. And she was a big fan, and it just surprised me that she was into it. So I said, have you read this? And she said, no. And I said, I'll tell you what, I'll go out and buy you a copy and I'll give it to you. And she dutifully, after she read it, gave it back to me. Can you imagine somebody saying that The Stars, My Destination was too mushy when it got all romantic? I said to her, what are you on about all romantic? It was a rape scene. But never mind, it was one of those things, I guess. And I've just given The Stars, My Destination back out to somebody else who came in my office for something or other. And when I get it back, I think I'm going to treat myself to reading it again.
See, I can't do that, can it? You know, and I mentioned this as well. You know, I think I've actually recorded a bit, which is going to, I'll play later on. Is what I always remember between me and you, Kieran, when we were doing the show was we were chalk and cheese. Do you know what I mean? In every kind of aspect of like doing the show, do you know what I mean? Like from down to research, from like reading habits really stick in my mind.
Even down to the bit there, Tony, where you'd insist we get naked for photographs. I mean, I'd be dead against it and you'd be all for it. I mean, it was a lot of stuff, not just, you know, that was some serious
stuff. I can't remember that.
Polar opposites, Tony, polar opposites.
Hey, well, like I say, it's quite... bizarre in a way, though, Kieran, that we started the show, you know, to talk about history and then, you know, like talk about science fiction history. And then here now, there's a book out celebrating it. And they say Starship Sofa's up there.
I think a little, was it Tiger Melville's little quote on the front? Is it Tiger Melville's on
yes.
the front? It is. Tiger Melville's little quote there saying how indispensable the youthful Starship Sofa is. And it's hard to believe that Starship Sofa is so youthful for its indispensability. Thus says Tiger, I seem to remember.
So why do you call him Tiger?
He says Tiger Melville. I'm sure it was something I thought it was, and it just stuck with me.
What are you reading at this moment then, Kieran?
I am reading one of Tiger Melville's books.
Oh, you still? I thought you said you put down that.
No, I'd finished Perdido Station. The kids' books gone back on the shelves there because I found it too much like hard going. In so much as that for reading on the bus into work in the morning there, it doesn't kind of suck me in. Then kids' book never did. You know, their kids' books are where you fill with your imagination, and I guess what I read books for nowadays is to be filled in by somebody else's imagination. And the Iron Council, I've just started that, and I haven't quite got into it yet, so it's not it's a dangerous phase. The dangerous phase is where all life stops, and I find myself creeping off to bury myself in the book there, to kind of stick it intravenously into my arm and disappear somewhere.
See, you know, it's been a, even with the audio, because of like, you know, I'm listening to stories and editing stories and that. It's been a long, long time since I've picked up a book and read a story. I've got one, I get like a few review copies, and we played this writer a few months ago called, I think he's called Hannu Rigiani or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually Charlie Stross is ranting and raving about him. He's a Finnish writer. He lives in Scotland or something like that. And he's got a new book out, and we've played a couple of his. I've got a story. I've got a few stories by him, and I've played one. So I'm trying to read that, but I can seem like 10 minutes, and then I'm like thinking, well, I've got to sort that out. You know what I mean? I kind of, there's too much to do, bloody Starship Sofren.
Yeah, I can't concentrate on an audiobook. The minute an audiobook starts playing there, it's like background noise. It's like having the radio on in the background. I just drift off. Whereas a book grounds me, beds me. It's like a lightning rod. I'm kind of there. But I tell you one thing, down here in London, I don't find myself walking home from work reading by the street lights.
You must finish. You finished a decent time now, do you, Kieran?
No, well, it depends. It depends. Sometimes I do and sometimes I don't. Because it's a kind of a managerial job, Tony. I have to sink, just like you do as editor of Starship Sofa, an awful lot of my time into it. Which means that you kind of work longer hours for the greater good.
Are you happy down there, Kieran? Are you happy with that? Because I've never really asked you that.
Absolutely, absolutely. It was a great move for me. I've kind of reached the top of my, I wouldn't say the top of my tree, but in Newcastle I found I couldn't find any opportunities that matched my experience. And it was fast becoming a closed shop, in so much as that if you didn't have, I guess for me, the right connections, And I'd been offered all sorts of jobs, and I couldn't see any of them really being worth my while. So coming down to London with a completely different set of, and I found a very unique place to work in, the one that just fitted all my experience, the kind of all the various places I'd worked. Whereas by the time I was doing Starship Sofa, I was basically deadheading myself. I had a wonderful little kind of lifestyle going on where I was working for four friends of mine, and I really wasn't having to stretch myself. I didn't have to carry keys, didn't have any worries. I could just go out and party and have a good time, and of course fit in Starship Sofa around my hangovers. It was great. But over here it's a different thing altogether. The time's not quite my own, but you know, on the other hand there.
What?
It's quite satisfying to kind of have a job which I can sink my teeth into, and I'm actually able to do quite well, and not getting the kind of global acclaim, Tony, that you've managed to achieve over the last 2 years, but in my own little small way, I'm quite content.
Actually, Kieran, like you say, it's everyone else, man. You know what I mean? It's always been the key. You know what I mean? That's one talent is that ask for help. And it's certainly not just me on Starship Sofa now. You know what I mean? There's so many people kind of help and do things to kind of keep it running. Do you know what I mean? I could take a few months off and, you know what I mean, it'd still be ticking over. So
that's incredible. It's a skill, Tony. It's a skill. It's a skill, you know, bleeding buggers around you dry. But do you still have some of the old guard, some of the guys who've been with the podcast from the very beginning? I guess who would they be?
I was going to say, you name someone, I'll tell you, because
the ex-Pat Paul and these are guys more or less from the forum.
Ex-Pat
Paul. What was the other guy? There was another guy who used to be on there, the English Assassin.
Yes, Simon Stillwell. Actually, Simon, a while ago, he used to do, he you do some great book reviews. You know, I think all three, we could probably sit down and have a really good conversation, because Simon would pick some great little topics or great like writers that especially you would be kind of, you know, well into, like Mervyn Peake and all sorts of like writers you probably wouldn't, I wouldn't probably pick up, you know, what I would now listening to kind of Simon. But he hasn't done any for a while. He moved away somewhere and then he came back. So I haven't, and he's still on the forums there now, Simon.
Yeah, there's what about Fred? Because
yes,
wrote you that wonderful story, didn't he, way back
Fred's
in the
still, and he's, like you say, he's actually just starting, Kieran. He's going to announce it now. He's going to start doing some graphic novel-like reviews, you know, once a month as well.
Oh, right.
Like of the old style, he says, you know, like kind of the classics, because that's
like Watchmen.
I honestly don't know, because it's way beyond me, all that comics bloody, you know, it's I never really was into comics, so I'm looking forward to this, to hopefully, you know, go out and get myself one if he recommends it, you know. But yes, Fred's still kicking around.
But you can't read comics. The language of comics escapes you.
You know,
it's
what?
Like me and audiobooks. You always said that you looked at a page of comic stuff there and you just couldn't understand.
I didn't know which
way.
Didn't know which way it went. But it's funny enough. I've got an iPhone, and if you get a comic on an iPhone, you just have to touch the screen and it moves to the correct panel. Do you know what I mean? So you can kind of follow it. You know,
so it's like a Janet and John approach to cartoons.
So it works for us. Do you know what I mean?
You should start off on the three kind of the kind of ones in the newspapers where they have three images running, three panes running side by side, three panels, sorry. You should start off on them and then work your way up there. Don't let your iPhone do all the hard work.
Work up to some like a full page.
Yeah, you got the wife to do the Hoover, and then you got the iPhone to do the comics for you.
Have you read any doozers, crappy things of lately, then, or not? Or
what, like pot boilers?
Mm-hmm.
Oh yes.
Go on, name a
bloke at work. There's a couple of lads at work who are ex role playing gamers, and funnily enough, I think like Charlie Stross is an ex role playing gamer. And who's another one there? And Tiger Melville is an ex-role-playing gamer. So they're kind of from that. They're about the same age as these guys as we are. Anyway, cutting a long story short, this guy recognized, he said, you should read Dan Abnett. Or is it Abnett or Abner? Or
yes,
Abnett?
I know who you're on about anyways.
Anyway, it took me months, because I kept on putting it down and putting it up, and I read The Ravenor Omnibus. But in a nutshell, it's all about this bloke called Ravenor, who travels around in a sauna chair, you know, like one of those old kind of saunas where you've got the doors on the front and
right.
You sit inside. He travels in one of those, but he never comes out of his sauna chair. And it's him, and he has a whole bunch of, like, two-dimensional types who wear kind of, I don't know, vinyl and leather and studs and stuff like that. And they basically work for the brewery. And the brewery is basically sending them out to kind of close down pubs, freehold pubs, or pubs run by managers they're not entirely happy about. So they'll send down Ravenor and his troop of kind of hardcore thugs. And he's basically busting up pubs. And that's really the in a nutshell. I mean, I'm assuming that he's telling allegorical stories, because if he's not, it's fucking awful. It's just teenage boy stuff. It was I just couldn't do that. I got halfway through the book and I suddenly discovered to my delight that he'd actually picked up a storyline and he was running with it. Pretty much before that particular point there, he's just shooting stuff. Having kind of describing what clothes they're wearing.
There is a big like scene with that kind of Warhammer-y, you know, movement thing, you know, like especially the covers as well, all the kind of big kind of robot-y looking guys. Is that one of the covers on it? Is it?
It's just because they're all aimed at teenage boys.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it kind of, again, like any good kid's book, it leaves it all up to the imagination. So just a thumbnail sketch of I don't know, Patience Kiris or whatever it is there, and off they go fumbling underneath their bedsheets, and then they, you know, surface again to turn the page. There's certainly no smutting there. It's just all in the imagination. I think actually mostly, you know, it's more likely the accounts of how well oiled the guns are about to set off, you know, the hair triggers of young lads in puberty.
But those stories might lead to, for one young man to pick up an Alfred Bester story. You know, if he likes that and he likes science fiction, he might wonder and think.
Well, Dan Abnett or whatever, apparently has written the Mr. Men books as well. So you're just as likely reading a Dan Abnett book to go off and pick up a Mr. Strong book, perhaps, or a Mr. Messy book.
Kieran, I've loved having this. It's been lovely walking down memory lane.
It has. And again, Tony, I mean, in awe, an absolute awe of what you and, of course, your audience in Starship Sofa have managed to achieve over the last 2 years to get yourself nominated for a Hugo is, of course, no mean feat. And that's incredible, Tony. Incredible.
You know what?
You always quite fancied the idea of following in the footsteps of the great editors. I can remember you boning up about who was the guy who did not New Worlds, but the other one. Who was the guy? Who was the editor that you quite fancied?
M. John Harrison. No,
not M. John Harrison. The guy, not New Worlds. He was M. John Harrison was the book. It was the book reviewer. I read Vernaconium the other day as well. That was quite good.
Is it good?
Not M. John Harrison. The guy who did, not New Worlds. What's the other...
come on.
The other science fiction magazine that's still going on right now.
The Interzone one.
Interzone. The editor of Interzone.
Right. Is... Oh, man.
What was the guy's name? You're quite hot and bothered about his ideas of kind of getting... doing kind of...
What's he called?
Different, swapping over content with other magazines and kind of stuff like that. I think he was a big inspiration for you. Whoever that guy was, he was a big inspiration for you.
Yes.
So you've become a great editor, sir.
Well, it's just in title, Kieran. Do you know what I mean? That's all it is.
It's in title on big, bold letters all the way across the captain's log.
Yes, because I asked Dee, who's actually put this together. I said, Dee, fund it up a few levels.
Obviously, you need no magnifying glass to spot that one as it falls off the top of the bookshelf towards you.
Well, hopefully, Kieran, when you get it, you'll have a... Honestly, it's quite bizarre, Kieran. It really is when you read it. Do you know what I mean? I don't know how other people will take reading it, but when...
I wonder if there is mass appeal for something like that, mind you.
Well, Kieran, honestly, the idea is it... Because it just helps... This money, honestly, go directly into keeping Starship Sova going. That's it. That's a fundamental reason why...
Getting Peter Watts to Oscon.
That's, you know what I mean, that one book there, if we can kind of sell that, like I say, that would be amazing. £100 I'm going to stick it up for, so sign it nice, do some doodles in it, doodle all over it, make it unique.
I'll draw him a space alien.
I hope you like this book, you know, I hope you like, even just like this, you know, what we've done with it, how we actually physically put it together, how it looks, because, like I say, it's by, you know, just listeners from the show, the transcriber team, I call them, you know, and it's just... They've had to sit through, honestly, like, especially, which one was it? I think it was the religion one. No, it was the Samuel Delaney one. That was over 2 hours long. You know, it's 20,000 words.
He didn't do Philip K. Dick. I was surprised at that.
Well, because it was
just asking too much from the transcribers.
It was a three-parter. And, funny enough, one of the transcribers called Gilderan said, Tony, have you ever thought if a lot of the transcribers drop out, have you got cover? Now, this Gilderan... is professional transcriber. He can knock up us, like do one of our shows in a couple of hours. And he said, send us some over. And, you know, as a last minute effort, you know, if nothing's happening and, you know, there's a lot of them dropping out, he says, I'll whip up, you know, I'll write up these ones and get them done. But as it happens, you know, there was a few dropped out. I think probably about four people dropped out, you know, just didn't realise.
Due to national and natural wastage, right? It would be a big job.
You didn't realise the amount of work. Honestly, like I say, Kieran, that which one did Samuel Delaney one? I think that was one of the biggest ones, and religion, you know, massive one.
But religion, funny, another one there, I was surprised you didn't put in there. And again,
volume was, two, Kieran, volume two.
Volume two was, and we got, somebody said it was the best podcast they'd ever listened to in the San Francisco Science Fiction Times or something. Some online online blog. It was. So It Goes. Who said So It Goes?
Doesn't ring any bells.
So It Goes. Sort out Kurt Vonnegut.
Oh, and we did the Kurt. Yes, because that was nice timing, wasn't it? That he died, and then we jumped on the bandwagon.
Jumped on the bandwagon.
Yes. Actually, it's funny. I don't know why I didn't put him in, to be quite honest, because I enjoyed, you know, the books I read by him as well, and enjoyed doing that show, you know, and it's always there for volume two, if anyone wants to.
If anybody really, really wants some punishment. Well, Tony,
Kieran.
An absolute pleasure. We've got to wind it up at some particular point there, and I'm still sitting at my desk.
Could talk all bloody night to you, big lad. It's very nice. So I will send these two books down. There's one for you. I've signed one already. If you sign that, send it back.
Right.
Do you want us to put postage on it for you?
Well, it'll be good, actually. It'll be good, because it's coming to work. I mean, I don't want work to think that I'm trying to get them to pay for stuff there, and it'll be marvellous.
So I'll send them. If you send that one back, and then... Actually, what would be nice, Kieran, hopefully, if you don't mind, I'll get you back on after you've, you know, a few weeks' time, after you've had a chance to look at it, and... Because... I'm not going to say read it, because I haven't read it like a toilet book, you know, where you're sitting and just dipping in and dipping out.
Yeah.
And it's excellent reading it like that, Kieran. It's just, it's bizarre, honestly. I don't know how you'll feel about it.
I can't imagine transcribing that much waffle, because, I mean, there may be little gems in there, here and there, but for the most part, it's going to be mind-numbing stuff there as we fumble around the subject. And as you'll want to point out there, I will use one word. Instead of using one word, I will use three. It's going to be mind-numbing.
But honestly, Kieran, that's the fundamental thing is, that's why this... That them shows were unique, and you know, hopefully that's why this book is unique as well. It's a little bit now of history that we did. Honestly, you want to be proud as out of it, to be quite honest. It really is. There, I've said myself. I'm getting all soppy now. Listen,
sir, live long and prosper.
Yes,
as they say in Star Trek.
Look after yourself. Don't drink too many warm shandies when you're down there. You know what I mean?
Well,
you're some northern pints inside.
It's been iced beer nowadays. They've moved on so much down here. Honest to goodness. And I haven't seen one single pearly king or queen.
This week,
at all.
Because you've got all the outfits in your wardrobe.
Well, as you know there, Tony, there's a lot a man can do in the privacy of his own house.
You know what there, you've just said there, you're saying the word there, and you still do it. That was one of the big things, wasn't it? There.
There, well, that, you see, would be one of those transcribing nightmares. I think these guys, have you managed to get them access to a good doctor or a pharmacist?
Oh, this is honest. We've got the pictures in, because that's one of the ideas, mine, Kieran, was to have like a picture of the transcriber before the start of the transcription.
And after.
Then just like a jokey one afterwards, you know, and one transcriber, Gail, she's wrapped up in a straitjacket. One of them is Phil. He actually got, I think he come off his bike, he's like a cyclist, you know, like he gets all dressed up like a proper professional looking cyclist. I don't know if he got hit by
it. But he wears leathers and stuff when he gets on his bike, like most folks do when they get on a bike.
Like a push bike. And you got
a push bike, see.
I think he
one
got
of those
hit.
Guys who wiggles his arse about
it. I think he got hit by a car, ran into a car, and you want to see the scar, you know, it's on the picture, one of the pictures. Oh, it looks nasty as hell.
That's a far way to go for a before and after.
So, Kieran,
did anybody drop a grand piano on themselves from a great height?
You'll have to wait and see. So will you recommend this book then, Kieran? Let's see how you say I recommend this book.
The book I haven't seen, it's full of theirs. I highly recommend it for those lovers of words beginning with T and ending in E. And I think any book without lots and lots of them wouldn't be worth buying.
Kieran, I wish I could give you a big hug.
All right then, Tony C. Smith, and it's been an absolute pleasure to touch base, sir.
You look after yourself, honestly, and I'll give you a phone, and we'll hopefully do this again, just to find out, you know, and you can be honest, you know what I mean? Tony was a pile of shite, and what the hell you're on about.
Well, it depends how heavy it is, and if I drop it on myself, that'll be the first thing, I guess.
Actually, what's nice is Bob's in there as well, because I did the Terry Pratchett.
You're going to send him out a copy?
I'll have to, aye, definitely.
And after I spoke to Bob on the phone just the other week.
I know he's on and kicking around because Bob lives in Australia, but because his Skype lights up, but he's always gambling.
Well, he was just leaving New Zealand, where he'd been bringing culture to the wilderness, and he'd been travelling with...
Culture and Bob don't go together, them words.
Bob had got himself another one of those jobs that he was very pleased with, where he did bugger all and he got paid lots of money. And he had just been touring around, was it North Island? North Island with Avenue Q. And he was just coming up to the wrap-up and he was heading back to Oz.
Kieran.
Back to the dogs, the tennis racket, and Nicky.
You look after yourself.
Aye, sir. I will see you around like a record.
Yes. Take good care of yourself.
Ta-da, sir.
Ta-da.
Will our heroes survive this terrible ordeal? Can they win through with their integrity unscathed? Can they escape without completely compromising their honour and artistic judgment? Tune in next week for the next exciting installment of
Starship Sofa. Evacuation.